Welcome along to episode 771 of the Milk Bar. Jason Forrest here with you as ever. And coming up on the show this week, we have a natter with Graziano De Prima, all about his show at Wolverhampton's Grand Theatre in April, as he'll be taking to the stage and telling his life story. We'll be having a natter with Georgia Barrett, all about washing and making sure we get it right. Don't do it too much. And when we do it in the best way possible. AEG had done some research. We'll be catching up with Jonathan Newby from the Student Loans Company, all about the deadlines for making sure you get your applications in time to make sure your funds are there for the new academic year. And we'll be looking back at Trans Day of Visibility as we have a natter with somebody who has got a story to tell and has been telling all about it in schools to help build allies. That's all on the way on the show this week.
Welcome to the Milk Bar. 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 Welcome to the Milk Bar.
Graziano De Prima will be sharing his life on stage at Wolverhampton's Grand Theatre on the 11th of April. And he joins me now to tell me a bit about the show. How are you doing, sir?
Ciao, everyone, and thank you for having me. I cannot wait to perform from you all in Wolverhampton. I really hope I'm going to see all the audience ready to buzz with me.
Well, it's going to be an amazing show, and you are bringing just shy of 2 hours of dance to the stage. That is a lot of work from you, isn't it?
I'm not going to lie, it is. But it's a very special one for me because it's the first time I'm telling my story on stage. And, you know, we've been on the road for a while now, and every evening is such a beautiful surprise to receive a standing ovation from the audience, especially because I wanted to be very honest about my story. It's the very first time I had the chance to look back where everything started, growing up in the vineyards with my parents, and start to realize in such a young age that dancing was a passion first, but I sacrificed everything for it to become a professional dancer without knowing that maybe one day this could be a potential job. And I'm living literally the dream. I call myself very, very grateful.
With 6 seasons on Strictly and the experience that you've had there, and all starting out with massive support from your family, and they never pushed you into this. This is always something you wanted to do, and they've just been there to make it happen, haven't they?
Absolutely, especially my mom. When I started, when I was six, when I found myself in front of the TV, and funny story, every time she reminded me this story, she was very surprised because nobody before me danced before. Obviously, growing up in a humble family, I realized straight away they were very honest with me. My mom would say, okay, we don't have money for the Nike shoes, but instead we're going to buy you the ballroom shoes so you can go and have a lesson. So I realized in such a young age that, you know, sacrifice and value was one of the first lessons I had to learn.
Growing up in Sicily as well, I mean, an amazing surroundings there, beautiful countryside, a wonderful country itself. And you must have had a great time growing up. And what, dancing in the streets, was that a thing?
Oh, basically in the square, this is another connecting circle. 2 years ago, I married my wife, she is a professional dancer as well. We're going to come back later to this. And we had our wedding in Sicily, in Riesi, the town where I grew up, in the square. The church is in the square. And it was so memorable because in the square is where I used to dance as a kid. And then growing up, I had a dance school, and I used to do all the shows in the square. So I basically, when I come back after many years, found all the same people that used to support me, used to be students, used to be there for me. They were waiting outside after the wedding. Was beautiful. It was a moment I will never forget. Yes, as a tiny town with that square is everything, where everything started, basically.
And from there, obviously, taking on the world, a number of tours already, and those tours have been really good for you. But this is your first chance to do this as a solo tour. And again, this is something which, I mean, is so special to you and to your family, and in particular, your wife.
Yes. You know what? My wife is my best friend, is the person who supports me the most. And the fact that we are doing the same job, she does Dance with the Stars in Italy while I'm doing Strictly. For us, it's such a big reunion where we can share our love for dancing, but our love for our relationship. Obviously, she's part of the story too. So there are so many circumstances put together. Also, our skills, all the lifts that we do together, which is, I think, our highlights when we dance together, is beautiful. Plus, the cast is incredible. There are so many circumstances that are making this more than a dream come true. I never thought I could be able to tell my story or be able to perform around UK. So it's been so unexpectedly beautiful.
Latin ballroom, what can we expect to see on stage?
Oh, Latin ballroom lives. It's a show where obviously there are also sad moments because, you know, it's a journey. It's a journey. It's the first time where I'm sharing a story about a personal story. About my brother, about being a twin, but also the fact that, you know, without trying, you never know where your direction can be. So during the show, there are moments where obviously there are my failures, there are unexpected moments. There is the support of my family in the end of the show. It's incredible because my mom is going to come to see the show very soon. Last time she saw me performing was on Strictly, my first ever show, my first season. So it's something that I'm going to remember forever. I'm quite emotional about it, but I don't want to think too much about it because I have to perform as well.
Well, hopefully you can get her to come along to the show in Wolverhampton on the 11th of April. It'd be amazing to have her there too. And maybe bring some of the wine from the vineyards in your hometown.
Oh, I asked my mom, actually, we were on the phone yesterday, and I said, any chance maybe you will dump big luggage? Oh no, I cannot bring it. And then, is if it's gonna open all the clothes? Okay, I'm gonna wait for summer then.
So obviously, this is a personal show, but one where you get to shine and be the star. So that's going to be a treat for everybody. And I mean, what highlight is there in the show for you? Is there a special moment that means the most?
There are two moments for me. One is when obviously I'm doing a solo. Embracing the love of my brother, and another one is dancing with my wife all along the tour, all along the show. It is incredible. And you know, I realized during this tour as well that when you got a very strong connection, and plus you're doing the same job, and you can connect your knowledge together, you've been dancing for so many years, you got the chance to embrace even more your feelings because you're dancing with somebody that is so well connected with you. So, and I think the particular of this show is that it's so honest. People, so many times I received a kind of honest review from the audience after the show on the stage, though, where they say, such a honest show where finally we had the chance to know you and know what you were before Strictly. And it's true, the people know me from Strictly, but now I think they got the chance to know where I come from and why I keep my feet so much on the floor. I'm coming from the vineyards. Everything is coming across. It's a bonus. I just want to give my best, enjoy the journey, and embrace the love for dancing. And that's the best thing as well, dancing with my wife, because we are so well connected that we can literally share even more our feelings through the audience.
A show which is centering around your first, 29 years on this planet. Can we expect maybe a special kind of autobiographical show when you hit 60 as well? Do you think that's something you'd be looking forward to?
I will try my best. And we're going to do another interview about it. Absolutely.
Okay, we'll get you back then. Meanwhile, now is the time to book tickets for Graziano de Prima Believe My Life on Stage, Wolverhampton's Grand Theatre, the 11th of April. 01902 429212 is the box office number. Grandtheatre.co.uk to get your tickets and be part of this very special evening that is going to be highlights throughout. You will absolutely adore it. This man is so talented. He is going to be bringing an awesome show to the stage. Graziano, thank you for joining us. Have an amazing time, and we look forward to you joining us in Wolverhampton in April.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and keep dancing. Mwah.
Now, surprisingly, AEG, leading washing machine manufacturer, are telling us not to wash our clothes. And to tell us more about the magical science behind all of this and a bit of a fresh test, I'm joined now by Georgia Barrett, technology journalist, presenter of The Gadget Show, and regular around these parts, who knows how to do a bit of science when it comes to it. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Maybe I should say I'm a specialist when it comes to washing now.
Oh,
I certainly am, because I do all the stone parts, so yeah.
But when it comes to washing, the technology behind it has improved so much over the years, and it is amazing how our washing machines use less water and are so much better for the environment than they have been in the past. But we all love the smell of fresh, clean clothes when we pop them on straight out the wardrobe. And sometimes people are maybe overwashing rather than only doing as much as they need.
I know, I know. This is exactly what this research has found. So it's been conducted by AEG, and they found that us Brits waste over £440 million per year on overwashing our clothes. And this comes about because, firstly, we damage our clothes a bit too much if we're washing them and tumble drying them, and they get misshapen or they break down. Also, it costs money when it comes to water and electricity. And then there's obviously the environmental impact of it as well. So they're basically on a campaign to get people to stop washing their clothes as much, which is actually really nice, because it means that you don't have to be putting on so many loads per week, instead of sort of being clean freaks and being thinking that we have to put it on every single time that we wear a garment. Or the research showed that sometimes people put it in the wash and they haven't even worn them.
That is scary.
That is scary, but when you realise why, so 69% of people say they sometimes wash clothes when they haven't worn them. That's because they come back from holiday, and I'm guilty of this, and instead of sorting out the bits that they have worn and they haven't worn, you think, oh, let's just chuck it all in the wash. Or if you maybe like have seasonal clothes and they've been in your wardrobe for a while, and you think, oh, maybe I should just like refresh it again before wearing it, you stick it in the wash again. So those are some of the reasons, which makes more sense instead of just like deciding to wash every item in your wardrobe when you haven't actually worn it. And yeah, as I said, this is leading to people losing out on money, people damaging their clothes, and ultimately it's not so good for the environment. So we need to slow down when it comes to washing our clothes and think, does this really need a clean?
Yeah, because I mean, the average is 2 washing loads per week. There are some people who are doing 3 washing loads a week, and obviously the kids make a difference to that. And if you have been out on a run, got covered in mud, played football, you've been sweating all over something, or it's just pasta sauce that you're wearing, then those are really good reasons for washing your clothes, aren't they?
Well, I just exactly. I just have this thing where I just automatically put everything in my washing basket. But since like conducting this research and learning a little bit more, I've realised that actually there is a bit of a system that you can go through to work out whether you need to wash something or not. And there's alternatives to sticking it in the wash. You can spot clean air it for a bit. You can actually put it on a steam refresh program, which means that you're not using as much water. So there's lots of different ways of sort of cleaning them and refreshing them so that it feels like it's new. I'm not asking people to go around in like their stinky clothes after they've been, you know, running around doing on the and playing football or something like that, but there's definitely, you know, there's definitely a balance that we can strike when it comes to this. And again, like the research found that, you know, nearly almost a third of adults will wash their clothes after one wear if they've gone to work in them. And again, you know, my husband definitely does that. Every time he wears a shirt, he'll just put it in the wash afterwards. And they're saying, you know, maybe you don't need to do that every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you a really disgusting fact that came out of this?
Scare us.
You know, because it is exactly scare us. 5% of men surveyed admit they wash their boxers after 4 wears.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
that's disgusting.
That's
I mean, it's
every
only 5%.
Day.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, damning all men here, but 5% actually said they didn't wash their boxers. They'd have to wear them 4 times before they stick them in the wash. That's going too far. Don't go that far, please.
Yeah, that reminds me of someone I was at university with, and they were very economical when it came to doing clothes washing. And there's you know, ways, means, and the right time on most things, and underwear every day. Yeah, there's a reason why.
Yeah, they were ahead of their times, but yeah, don't be disgusting with it. Go through our formula. So we basically come up with a formula where you can sort of, it's almost like a flow chart that you can work through, but you look at the fabric, you do a fresh test on it, which is can you see anything, how does it smell like, how does it feel, and then it tells you what action you should take off the back of it. So yeah, if you're wanting to try and cut back on the number of washes, I do urge you to have a little look at that and just sort of maybe reframing your mind a little bit around not having to stick everything in the wash all the time.
Yeah. So it's just like, yeah, so you say if you go on holiday and you repack things, I think you get it because, I mean, you are traveling around the country. I think last time I saw you in person, we were both down in Bristol watching a drone display. And
Oh, yes, of course.
I mean, you would have the outfits that you wear for the night. You're changing things several times. It's like you say with work, you might wear something like 4 or 5 hours to sit around an office on the half day you go in these days. And does it really need to go in the wash? Well, probably you can stick it in the wardrobe until the next time you go in for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, or just like air it for a bit. That's something that I'm just trying to do now a lot more, which is, it doesn't mean like stick it back in the wardrobe straight from you wearing it all day, but air it, have a little look if there's a spot clean that you need to do. Thinking about maybe steam refreshing it instead. There's just different ways. Instead of just automatically thinking you've got to go in the wash, even though you're actually fine. If we can reframe it, then we can just save a huge amount of money and it's better for the environment.
And even as we speak at the moment, you are living and breathing this by wearing a black shirt.
Yeah, this is I haven't washed it for a good month now.
It was white to begin with. No, it wasn't.
Was
But
white, exactly.
so it is about the so not only reducing costs on things like water and stuff, but laundry liquids and all that sort of thing, they cost a fortune these days. So anything we can do, say
They really do.
yep.
And who likes doing loads of washing? I'm letting you off the hook here. You don't have to do as much washing as what you think you do. Like, please, this is what everybody wants to hear. And I mean, another thing that lots of people are guilty of is that they put on their washing machine and it's not a full load. So, 71% of adults do that, which again, I very much do because I just, sometimes if you need a particular load to be done, you're like, okay, I'll just stick it in. Which again, it's not so good for the environment that, and it does waste water. So we need to think about making those loads super full before you stick the washing machine on.
Yeah, because I think something like a half load uses 3/4 of the water for a full load. So you might as well, you might as well refresh something that's there if you're going to do it later in the week anyway, but don't do it because you don't
Well,
need to.
yes, exactly. You've got it. You've got it. You
Now,
see?
you've talked.
How many times do you wash your, how many loads do you think you put on per week?
I think that there's normally the coloureds and the whites and possibly then one lot of socks and underwear. So it's probably
Three.
three-ish, but I'm forever spilling food down me. So big enough mouth,
But you
keep
can
missing
spot
it.
clean that. You can spot clean that. You
We'll
see,
give
there
that a
are
go.
options.
But the thing I like is this Pro Steam thing, and this is something that AEG have got on their washers that I'd not heard of before. But it sounds like a brilliant way of getting everything a bit zuzzed up.
Yeah, exactly. So it uses 96% less water, which is a huge amount. It barely uses any water at all. It's really quick to use. And it's just a great little setting that they have in the washing machine. So if you do have access to that, then well worth experimenting with it.
Okay, so we've got the fresh test. Where do we go to get all our tips on how we get this right?
Oh yeah, so if you want to find out more, then go to aeg.co.uk and just type in "don't wash your clothes," and it'll bring up that lovely flow chart and it'll tell you when you should be washing stuff and when you shouldn't be washing stuff.
We have been told and revised it is out there. And if you have got your AEG washer, give that steam thingy a try. It sounds like brilliant fun. Always good to talk to you, Georgia Barrett. Thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Jason.
New research released for the 31st of March, Trans Day of Visibility, is showing that many kids don't know what an ally is when it comes to what they would do if one of their friends discovered they were trans. To tell us more, I'm joined now by Editor Koza. Hello.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Good to talk to you, particularly on around a subject which can be confusing, and sometimes people use it as divisive as well. When actually the reality is, people are people, and we all have our own interpretation of ourselves, and that's the way it should be.
Yes, definitely.
So, tell us a bit about the research to begin with.
Well, Just Like Us has been doing quite a bit of research into how kids feel at school because that is sort of the aim of the charity, is to try and make lives for LGBT plus young people as livable and enjoyable as possible. And unfortunately, given the current very turbulent sort of climate surrounding trans rights and trans identities in general, it's been quite difficult for a lot of kids to be able to wrap their heads around what is true and what isn't true about trans people and how best to support the people in their lives who may actually be trans.
Because I think the important thing to remember here is, unless you're trans, you can't possibly understand what it's like.
Yes, and I think that is the biggest sticking point for quite a lot of people when it comes to acceptance, is that there's this realization that isn't happening enough, that you don't have to understand something to be able to respect it and accommodate people.
And I think that, yeah, that's it. And this is where the ally status comes in as much as anything else. You know, being able to say, no, I accept somebody's understanding of themselves. And that is, you know, such an important part of society. And it's not just around trans issues. It's around so many others as well. And, you know, it is so difficult sometimes to see, particularly with the way people behave online and in social media, that, you know, there's hatred out there for things that people just haven't got a clue about.
Yes, definitely. I think it's almost always the case of listening to certain people or certain outlets who push a certain sort of narrative, and there is not much independent and thorough research being done on their own account. And so people are hearing things from people that they trust, and they're re-reporting it and repurposing it in a way that they don't really understand, because they've just got it from one source and they've decided that that is the gospel.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, the survey shown that 65% of secondary school pupils would struggle to know how to support a friend who came out as trans. And whilst realizing your situation and what you potentially may or may not want to change about yourself to fit in with your mental image of how your body should be, you know, it isn't, you know, one size fits all either, is it? And so it means that, you know, if you do have someone in your life who identifies as trans, then, you know, it's how do you work with them to make that as an easier situation for them?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of conflicting opinions on how best to support people, but I think the most basic thing is, most kids start off their transition journey, which is what we call it when you start to present as the gender that you want to be in society rather than the one that you were assigned at birth. But most people will maybe have a name change or go by a different nickname than what they were previously going by. Some people experiment with things like different pronouns, which is also a very contentious topic lately. But I think the biggest thing that friends and allies of trans kids in schools can do is just make sure that if they are seeing poor behavior or disrespect or victimization based on them being trans, that you call it out, that you say, actually, no, this is not acceptable behavior. This is not hurting anybody, except your comments are hurting them. And you should be able to, you know, change the way that you address someone, like we do with many different celebrities and other people in our lives. There should not be such a huge barrier to being able to adjust just a little bit of your behavior, because it will make just such a world of a difference for a trans kid who is just starting to get their footing in the world.
Yeah, but I mean, you're Elliot. I wouldn't want to call you Dave. You're Elliot. That's how it works. It's only the same thing, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. I always think back to when Snoop Dogg started going by Snoop Lion, and everyone was like, all right, cool, brilliant. But as soon as a trans person does it, suddenly it's a massive problem. And I just don't understand why there is such a mental difference for so many people.
And you've got to remember as well, for somebody to have come out is an incredibly brave thing to do based on the way in which the world often treats people who are different for whatever reason.
Yes, definitely. I think that the current guidance around trans people in schools that they're trying to push right now is going to be even more damaging for kids who feel like they might be able to come out but aren't quite sure. It's really, really disparaging and really difficult to deal with, when, especially when you're growing up in a climate where even the people that are supposed to be able to protect you are saying, well, actually, no, you're not allowed to be yourself in school because we've decided that it's not valid.
School is often very binary, and it isn't an easy one to work out who you are, whoever you are, let alone if it is something that is often treated as divisive as gender identity.
Yeah, exactly.
So for you, I mean, how did your journey begin? Were you able to find allies? And is that one of the lack of it, is that one of the reasons you're talking in schools these days?
Well, I didn't actually go to secondary school in the UK. I went to primary school in the UK, and I went to an all-girls school for a little bit. So that was definitely a difficult issue for me, because I had to wear a uniform skirt and things like that. And it was very strange experience for me because I didn't feel like I fit in, but I didn't have the language or the vocabulary to describe why that was. But when I was growing up outside of the UK and going to schools there, because of different things like laws and anti-LGBT legislation, it was really difficult to find people who were supportive of me. So I often took to different online spaces and things like that to be able to get the support that I needed.
So you've highlighted there that the UK is better than many places, but it's still not right, is it?
Yes, I think saying that one place is better than another, it doesn't necessarily give the full picture because yes, the UK on paper still has things like the Equality Act, where people who have the protected characteristic of gender reassignment are protected under that law, but given all of the current pushes for different legislation and the way that our media is currently working, it's not necessarily the case that every trans person is going to be better off in this country than another.
Yeah, and whilst whatever legal protection there is, the fact that one person gets a difficult time because of who they are is still wrong. And it's whilst it's one
Yeah.
person, it's still an issue.
Yes, exactly.
So where can we go to find out more about the work being done by the charity and also yeah, the sort of the talks that you and many of your peers are doing in schools around the UK?
So Just Like Us is very active on social media. We have Instagram, we have Twitter, and then you also have the website. I believe it is justlikeus.org, but if that's not the case, then you can just Google Just Like Us and it will be the first thing to come up. We also do lots of different things like radio appearances. We've done some TV interviews before, and we work with quite a few magazines like Gay Times, Pink News, and most recently The Guardian to spread as much of the research and as much of the message as possible.
Yeah, and say it's about research. It's about reality. It's about real things. It's not about opinions because opinions are one thing.
No.
We're all entitled to those, but keep them to yourself if it's going to hurt somebody else.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good way to live, I think.
Justlikeus.org is that website, and you can go on there and look at the work being done. And as part of Trans Day of Visibility and the overall week and month of action, which takes place, it's about just understanding one another. And if only we could all do that, we'd be in a better place as well.
I definitely agree with that, yeah.
Well, Editor Kozer, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
It seems that students are looking at leaving it a little bit late to get their student loans in place to cover their tuition fees and, of course, living expenses during the new academic year that starts in September. To tell us more, I'm joined now by Jonathan Newby, service owner at the Student Loans Company. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks, Jason, for having me. Yes, I'm from the Student Loans Company, and we've just done some research that says that students should be applying now for student finance. But our research shows that over half are planning to leave it until later into the year. Now, just to give you a bit of context about that, around 2 million people each year apply for student finance, and it can take the Student Loans Company up to many weeks to process each one. However, we do guarantee that everybody who puts their application in by the 17th of May will have their funding in place for the start of term. Going back to that research, it shows that over half of students are going to leave it late, often because they think they have to wait to apply or because they don't understand how easy it is for them to complete their application.
So yeah, because I mean, it could well be they maybe haven't quite made their mind at which university they're going to, depending on the final offers they get after they get their exam results. And that isn't a reason not to do it. If you're committed to university next year, or you're like 90% there, then it is absolutely essential you get this paperwork done.
Completely. The students don't have to wait to have their university place confirmed. They can apply now, safe in the knowledge that they can change their mind at a later time. They can change university, they can change the course, they can even withdraw or cancel their application should they need to. It's very easy for them to do all that online themselves.
But the important part is getting things set up because it has to have an account. And obviously, student loans may have equally have changed since their parents were uni. I was first year of student loans, and so the kids of people my age almost think, oh, it's simple. You get your bit of a grant. No, you don't anymore. That doesn't happen. Then you move on to actually sort out student loan as and when you need it. But that's not the case. You know that you're going to have to be ready to cover the tuition fees and, of course, the the cost of your lifestyle whilst you're there. And whilst you may also be looking at getting a job, if you are looking at going and you're going to need that loan to cover tuition fees, etc., then it's vitally important that that's done. And what sort of information do you need from people?
So you're completely right. And I do think a lot has changed from when parents to current students have been to applying for student finance. So every person has individual circumstances and is different and is assessed slightly differently. It also depends on the products and that the student wants to apply for. So you pulled a few out there, but we've got tuition fee loans, maintenance loans, disabled students allowance. All of those do have slightly different evidence requirements, but most people, 99.9% of people, should be able to apply online. The application process should take around 30 minutes. And most people, what we ask for is to have their identity evidence ready and the national insurance number. If a student does have a sponsor or a parent who is submitting their financial details to help process the application, they just need to have their financial information on hand as well. But that will be all submitted as part of their own part of the application process.
Can people be turned down for a student loan?
Yeah, people can be turned down for student loan. There are eligibility criteria that people need to meet. And of course, the university the college that they're studying at needs to be designated for funding, and the course needs to be eligible for funding as well. Also, the individual's personal circumstances can have an impact on whether the application can be approved for funding or not. But it's very complex legislation that governs the assessments that we do. So every student is treated individually and just needs to submit their application and have that conversation with us, and we'll assess them based on their circumstances.
And sometimes it could just be they don't know how to do it and they're expecting to get to uni during Freshers Week and be told what to do then.
Yes, no, completely agree. And as we've said before, the things like the UCAS deadline, which is the 16th of May, is just before our payment guarantee deadline date of the 17th of May. But as we've mentioned earlier on, students don't need to wait until things such as clearing week or UCAS confirmation deadline to be able to apply for their student finance. They can do all that now in that quick 30-minute application process that I've mentioned, and they can change any of those details later on if they need to.
And it's very much about being prepared, and not only you chose your courses a couple of years ago, you've done the exams by the time you hit this deadline date, you're just waiting for the results, but you're absolutely essential that you get this done as well. And it's all about being prepared and doing the research, and hopefully they've gone off and visited the universities that they're interested, so they've seen the cities or that they're looking for, or if they're coming to the hometown in the University of Wolverhampton, which obviously is many people are choosing so they can live at home. It is worthwhile finding out everything you need to know beforehand, and this is just another part of that.
Completely agree. We know that a lot of students will have their preferred choice universities already selected and be waiting for things such as A-level results and for the universities to be able to confirm those places. But we do know that doesn't always go to plan for students as well. So the key message there is you still can change your mind if you need to. If something happens within the next couple of months, you maybe don't get the results that you were expecting, or you don't get into your preferred university, you can change that on your application. But the main point here is apply now, don't wait. As we did mention, it does take us several weeks to assess each individual circumstances, and getting your application in before that May 17th guarantee will give the students peace of mind that their funding will be in place.
Yeah, because it is part of the processing, as you just said. There's a lot that goes into this. It isn't stick your name down and you're in. It is looking at the background. And would it be different for somebody who is actually studying at a university close to home, so not looking at finding accommodation nearby, as it would be to somebody who's just applying to go and live in the outer reaches of Scotland or something?
No, so the application process isn't any different, depending on where you're studying, where you're living. We do have some customers that will be living at home with their parents or with family while they're studying. Each circumstance may award different types of different rates of maintenance loan for the students to be awarded. However, the application process itself is very similar for everybody. They would just go online and complete their details. They would tell us where they were living, where they were studying, whilst they were studying, sorry. And we would award them a rate of maintenance loan based on their individual circumstances. So whether they're living with their parents or whether they're living by themselves or in student accommodation. But just to confirm, there's no change in the application process for students for that one.
And whilst they may be a little concerned about the sort of level of debt they're looking at going into this, obviously the repayments are all based on income as well. So it is something which is balanced and fair for everybody.
On our GovUK student finance website, students will be able to find out a bit more information about the repayment terms and conditions that they will be signing up to. There's a lot more information on that page about eligibility and who can apply and what type of evidence that they would need to receive, but also all of the various products and supplementary grants that we have are all listed on that website.
So full details, gov.uk/student-finance, all is one word. Find out all the details, get your application in. That date for guaranteeing that you've got everything in place in time for uni is the 17th of May. Make sure you get it all sorted. Be ready for your education and a gateway to a brilliant start in life.
Yes, completely agree. We guarantee everyone who puts their application in by the 17th of May will have their funding in place for the start of the term. And just to remind everybody, you can apply and find everything online. The application will take about 30 minutes, and for the most, and it will be very straightforward. And just to confirm that students can apply safe in the knowledge that any details they're putting in their application about their university or their course, they can change it before they start their course.
But they say they by then will have an online account which will allow them to do that as well. That's the thing. It gives you the portal to be able to update all the details and any changes. And even if you're not certain on what, maybe some of the factors surrounding parental contributions and the like, get the application in your worst case scenario, and then you can change it accordingly later.
That's completely correct. Yes.
Sounds like a great way of doing it, getting ready for a university term ahead, and make sure you get your applications in on time. All these things fit together, don't they?
Yes, completely do.
Jonathan Newby from the Student Loan Company, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's all for this week. Thank you so much for joining me back with episode 772 next week. I'll see you then. So off for now.
Goodbye from the mail bar. Goodbye from the mail bar. Goodbye from the milk bar. Goodbye from the milk bar. Yeah. Goodbye from the milk bar. Yeah.